This is New Beginnings, hosted by award-winning broadcaster and speaker Freddie Bell. A program for and about America's 78 million baby boomers. Here's your host, Freddie Bell.
Hi, everybody. I am Freddie Bell. On the show this week, we welcome Jay Hapala from AARP. He'll be talking about scams. I'll give you part two of our top 10 signs for heart disease. Plus, we'll give you the news of the week and this week's words to the wise. This is New Beginnings, and our show starts right now. Last week when we were together, we gave you the 10 sneaky signs that you may have heart disease. We gave you the top five. Number one was you struggle to breathe when lying flat. Number two, you have leg or hip pain or both while walking. Number three, you can't rise to the occasion we're talking about sexually. Number four, or get your juices flowing, a companion number. And number five, you're fatigued for no reason. Let's continue now with our list of the top 10 signals that you may have heart disease on New Beginnings. Number six, you get up to pee. Chugging beer isn't the only reason you wake up to pee. A weak heart pumps less blood to the kidneys, which can cause fluid buildup and swollen ankles and legs. At bedtime, gravity drains fluid back to the heart, and the kidneys have more fluid to filter. Nighttime urination may increase with age, especially in men with enlarged prostates and women with incontinence issues. But waking more than once a night to pee is concerning, says Dr. Bott, especially if paired with swollen ankles. Number seven, your breath could kill houseplants. Bad breath is caused by out-of-control bacteria, and it can also damage more than your social life. Bacteria can enter your bloodstream through bleeding or diseased gums, which is linked to inflammation, clogged arteries, and stroke. There's a correlation between people who have periodontal disease and people with cardiovascular disease, that according to Florida periodontist David Gannett. Number eight, you have spotty, fatty growth. These appear as lesions, and these lesions feel like calcium deposits in the tendons, and they can indicate sky-high cholesterol. It usually occurs near the ankles and the elbows and are especially prominent in people with a family history of high cholesterol. There was one study that found that the risk of cardiovascular disease was three times higher among those with familial cholesterol problems, a genetic predisposition to high cholesterol. Number nine, your ankles are swollen. When the heart isn't efficiently pumping blood, as we mentioned, fluid can swell both legs. In a study of adults with no history of cardiovascular disease, fluid in the lower extremities was associated with future hospitalizations for heart failure. Swelling can also occur when leg veins can't return fluid to the heart. In cases related to heart failure, swelling also occurs in both legs. Swelling in one leg could be due to a blood clot or an infection. Call your doctor if leg swelling is accompanied by heart failure symptoms such as shortness of breath. And number 10, you're feeling nauseous. Unexplained queasiness could be a sign of heart failure, says Cleveland Clinic cardiologist Nicholas Rothman. When the heart struggles to pump blood, fluid and pressure can build up in the lungs, abdomen, and lower extremities. Bloating and water retention may lead to nausea, feeling full quickly, and decreased appetite. There's also a link between queasiness and heart attacks. Women are more likely to report nausea as a heart attack symptom. Those with heart failure or heart attack history should watch for persistent nausea that occurs with bloating, weight gain, swelling in legs or ankles, or shortness of breath. If these symptoms occur alongside acute chest, jaw, or shoulder pain, call 911 right away. I'm Freddie Bell with the top 10 signals that you may be suffering from a heart disease. And if you missed any of this, just go to our website, freddiebell.com, click on radio, and you'll see our podcast right there.
You're listening to New Beginnings. New Beginnings with Freddie Bell.
Joining us right now is the Vaccine Equity Director for the Minnesota Department of Health, Elizabeth Ebalt. Good morning and welcome back to the show.
Hi, Freddie. Good morning.
I'm just curious, should residents of the state of Minnesota sign up for a third or fourth vaccine now, depending upon the manufacturer?
So when we think about booster shots and third and fourth doses of the vaccine, I get that there might be a little bit of confusion. So let's just try and break it down a bit. So right now, today, if you are 12 and older and received Pfizer, you're 18 and older and receive Moderna, or you're 18 and older and receive Johnson & Johnson, you should get a booster shot. And by booster shot, I mean your first series of the Pfizer or Moderna vaccines had two shots with them, or you received one shot of J&J. And so you would then need a booster shot to supplement that original series. For Pfizer and Moderna, that booster shot should be 5 months after you completed your original two-dose series. And for J&J, it should be 2 months after that first shot. And it's recommended for J&J recipients that you should get that booster shot of either Pfizer or Moderna to follow your first J&J shot. Okay, now for people who have other health conditions, so you fall into that immunocompromised category, last fall it was recommended that if you got Pfizer or Moderna, you should go ahead and get a third shot as an additional dose to ensure that base layer protection that you need for your original vaccine series. So for these people, an original series is actually three shots. And then at the start of this year, January, for the same group of people, it was recommended that you would need to get a booster shot now. So in other words, a fourth shot at least 3 months after that third dose to then, you know, again, give that strengthening to that original vaccine series. So that's really the only group of people right now who are actually getting a quote unquote fourth dose of the vaccine. For us in the larger public who, you know, are just fine right now with our original series plus our booster shot, just this week, Pfizer submitted data to the FDA that said that, you know, there's a potential need that this larger general public will need a fourth shot. So while the booster shot is really helpful at protecting against serious illness and hospitalization, that fourth shot will actually help against getting the disease in the first place, getting the virus in the first place. So more information is going to be coming on that in the couple coming weeks, but we really right now shouldn't rush as a general public to go sign up and get a fourth shot. It's important for us to wait for that guidance to come from the FDA and CDC, just like we have all these past months.
We're talking with Elizabeth Ebalt. She is the Vaccine Equity Director for the Minnesota Department of Health. What about the mask mandates? We see where the mask mandates are dropping all across the country, Hawaii being the last state to say you don't need to wear the mask. Does this mean that all is clear now with regard to the pandemic?
Yes. So we have been seeing, you know, this progress, I suppose, in the last couple of weeks, this progression of states relieving residents of these mask mandates. And so I think it's important for us to put context around these new mask guidances. So the CDC now says that our mask guidance is largely dependent on where you live and how COVID is affecting the hospitals and clinics near you. So it says that for people who live in low to medium risk areas, and that's determined by how strained, you know, hospitals are in a given area, they can choose to go mask-free indoors. For people who live in high-risk areas, those are areas, again, then where hospitals are very strained, then masking indoors should remain the practice. Now, to figure out which category you fall into, you go to the CDC website, cdc.gov. It's right there on the front, on the first page. There's a helpful tool to help you figure that out. And while we're obviously then moving in the right direction with this updated guidance, I don't think we should confuse that then with the fact that COVID is still very much a real threat for many people. Many among us are still wearing masks because of health conditions they live with, because they spend a lot of time around immunocompromised people, or because they maybe have young children who can't be vaccinated themselves. So this new masking guidance, you know, it gives us a break for some of us from mask wearing, sure, but it also provides parameters for if and when we need to return to wearing masks in schools and communities because of increases in cases or new variants. So while, you know, many of us are choosing to remove masks, we can't forget those practices that will help us maintain this forward progress. Get tested if you have COVID symptoms or been in close contact with someone who's positive, or you're traveling or just returned from traveling. Get vaccinated and get up to date on your vaccine series with those additional doses. And if you're up to date on your vaccine, or excuse me, if you're not up to date on your vaccines and you're in an indoor public space, maintain that social distance, that 6 feet from others, especially if you're at higher risk of getting sick. It's important for us to maintain these practices for sure.
So should we be concerned about social distancing? So should that just be a practice anyway, just to make sure that we're giving, number one, people their space, but if they are compromised, that we lower the chance of us getting infected?
Yeah, you know, Freddie, I think it's an individual decision, and I think it has individual ramifications for sure. I mean, again, like if you're someone who falls into this category of, you know, you might be immunocompromised, and you might be at high risk of getting sick, for example, and you're not up to date on your vaccine series. Yeah, of course, you know, maintain that 6 feet distance. If you're someone who is maybe healthy themselves, but you're being kind of cautious of other people who might be in these who might have those conditions, maybe it makes sense for you on a personal level to maintain that 6 feet distance. It's a very personal decision. And I think people are taking a lot of different, you know, there are a lot of different variations based off the individual. But I think what remains the case is that, you know, like I just mentioned, if you're not up to date on your vaccines, you're in an indoor public space, and especially if you're at higher risk of getting sick, it will definitely help to maintain that distance.
Interesting. Elizabeth Ebolt with us this weekend. So there's signs of another variant in Wuhan, China, where the virus originated. Should we be concerned?
Right. So there have been reports this week of high numbers of positive cases of an Omicron variant in provinces in China. And that has caused their government to implement some lockdowns. And I think certainly because of the nature of this virus, it can give us pause to hear that kind of news. But at the same time, from the outset, we've always talked about and prepared ourselves and our communities and our public health infrastructure for these possible variants and how they might affect us. So while we keep a close eye on what's happening in China, I just want to double down again on those practices that we can do right here, right now at home to fortify our communities against the virus. Again, get vaccinated and up to date on your vaccine. Get tested. Wear a mask regardless of your vaccination status if you're in that high-risk area. And again, that maintaining of social distancing in public spaces like we just talked about, you know, that's key too.
So we are in a different place, a completely different place than we were just over 2 years ago when the virus was first deemed a pandemic here in America.
It's true. We really haven't. We've seen, I think it can be hard to see the forest for the trees, you know, in this situation, because it's been so traumatic for so many people. Mm-hmm. And we can't make light of that. But we can also, I think it now with this 2 year look back, we can see how much progress has been made in such a short amount of time because of all of the research and the science, but also because of all that the public has done, all that individuals have done to try and limit the spread of this virus. It's truly incredible, and it's really a collective effort, and it will remain a collective effort for us to move forward in hopefully a positive and hopeful manner.
We're just about out of time. Are there any specials still on the table for students to get vaccinated with their families?
Oh yeah, I got some specials. So we still have our $100,000 college scholarship drawing taking place right now for children between 5 to 11 years old. That's underway. So I really encourage all households with children in this age range, again, 5 to 11, to take advantage of this opportunity. If kids in this age range receive 2 shots of the Pfizer vaccine between March 1st and April 11th, they'll be eligible to win a $100,000 scholarship. There are going to be 5 winners selected on April 15th. So open now, go to our vaccine rewards page at mn.gov to register, or call our COVID-19 hotline, 833-431-2053. It's very exciting. I highly encourage it.
Elizabeth Ebolt, Vaccine Equity Director for the Minnesota Department of Health, thank you for being with us.
Thanks, Freddie. Take care.
I'm Freddie Bell, and our show doesn't stop.
You're listening to New Beginnings. New Beginnings with Freddie Bell.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to New Beginnings. So glad you're with us this weekend. And now we go to AARP Twin Cities, where we find the Associate Director for Community Engagement, Mr. Jay Hapala.
Hey, good morning, Chantel. Good morning, Freddie. Good to be with you.
With it being tax season, let's talk a little bit about some of the fraudulent activity that happens around tax season that people may not be aware of.
Yeah, that's right. It is tax season, and it was Ben Franklin who said nothing in life is certain but death and taxes, and I'm the one who said there's a third item there that we all got to be worried about, and that is another certainty, people trying to rip us off and steal our money, these con artists. So at AARP, what we do, we run the Fraud Watch Network, and we take thousands of reports from the public and our members across the country, we use that information to educate people and make sure you're informed about the different scams out there. I had a conversation this week with a colleague at the IRS, and she says this year the IRS is really anticipating an increase in tax-related identity theft and fraud because there are many new changes to the tax laws that are going to give people new different credits because of the pandemic that they haven't qualified for. So it's really time to be vigilant about filing your taxes and making sure people are doing the right thing.
What are some of the first signs of, you know, I know that I have a sister. She had some issues with filing her taxes 1 year and found out that someone else filed in her name. She had a whole situation where she had to get her name cleared. She had to go through all of this identity theft situations and getting all of that. It was a lot to deal with. So are there some signs that or some things you can watch for around this time of year to make sure that someone is not filing in your name, using your name for anything tax purpose wise?
Yeah, here's the thing with tax identity theft is that you're a person, you or I, could have our identity really stolen anywhere. So it could be a data breach at some company that we do business with, some records that are sitting in a dumpster somewhere, someone could go in there and steal them. Or it could be more commonly a phishing attack where someone targets us online and asks for our personal information and then takes that information and uses it to file for a tax return in our name. And when that happens, like your sister, it's a mess. You know, you're going to be on the phone. You're going to be doing paperwork. You're going to get your money back eventually, but no one wants to be in that situation. So really the IRS and at AARP, we have the best advice really that the IRS gives, or the top advice, is to file your taxes early. So if you can beat the con artist, if your identity has been stolen, if you can file before them, then they'll be the ones getting denied instead of you. And then, you know, it comes down to taking standard precautions against identity theft. You know, don't give out your information to people. Be cautious about clicking on links in your emails. Shred your paper documents at home. But, you know, the IRS has really taken a bite out of all this identity theft. And the main way they're doing that is they've started the PIN program. So anyone, you or I, whether we've experienced identity theft or not, you can go on the IRS website. And then you get a PIN number if you register and go through the process. Then if someone went in that dumpster and they stole your identity, who knows where, they don't have that PIN number they would need to file for your tax return. So that's something anyone can do today, is go on to IRS.gov and get that PIN number.
So you don't have to wait until it's time to file your taxes to get the PIN?
That's correct. You could do that essentially year-round.
Is there something that people should look for as far as who's doing their filing for them? Some people do it themselves online in these tax websites. But what about trusting a person with all of your information and they're filing on your behalf, and you have to be mindful of that?
Yeah, I'm really glad you asked that, Chantel. So here in the Twin Cities, if, you know, in the news over the last few years, there were stories about tax preparers who were fraudulent and they were stealing money from the government, putting their clients at risk by filing false returns. And then also they were just straight up stealing from their clients. So, you know, if you're dealing with some of the big name tax preparers, that might be the route you want to go. But if you're just going to use someone you never met before, every tax preparer needs to have an identification number with the IRS. So they have this, they're on file and you can look them up. So if you went online and looked up IRS PTIN, it's a preparer tax identification number. You should be able to find this person who's trying to, you know, help you do your taxes and for a fee. And some warning signs that your tax preparer might be a fraud is that they want to get paid cash. They want to deposit your refund in their bank account, and then they give you your refund minus their fee. It's a red flag if they want to take a percentage of your tax refund instead of a flat fee that they charge. And then, you know what, if they don't want to sign your paperwork with their signature and identity, then that's a red flag too.
So many red flags, but we're glad that you're up on that, Jay Hoppala, AARP. It's always good to talk to you about these type of fraudulent events. There's something happening, a virtual event though, this coming up. Is it March 30th, March 29th and March 30th?
Yeah, that's right. And you know, I'm glad you said that about just being empowered and having this information. We're not trying to scare people out here. The more you know,
me.
The more you
right.
Come on,
scare me every time.
You know, knowledge is power. Knowledge is power. You can stay ahead of these con artists.
Right.
But yeah, one way to do that is to join our virtual events and the programs we have. You know, we're doing a couple on March 29th and 30th. We're going to get into more on the tax identity theft issues and all the, you know, all these new scams that are popping up everywhere. And people can find out about that at our website is aarp.org/MN events.
I have a question. How do you guys find out about most of these scams? I know there's probably researchers and you guys go out and get information probably from maybe government sources. But do you get most of your information on the newest, latest scams from people reporting these type of scams that happen to them?
Yeah, that's right. So we run a call center nationwide. It's called our Fraud Watch helpline. And so we get about 500 reports a week just through that helpline. And that,
wow.
So yeah, that's a lot of information and a lot of people out there being scammed and targeted by scams. So we get all of those reports. And then, yes, I do work with the fraud investigators and government agencies, and we all work together with our volunteers, too, collecting information so that we can share with the public.
Wow. Well, great work that you're doing. Always a pleasure to speak to you, Jay Hoppala, Associate State Director of Community Engagement, AARP. Any final thoughts and any contact information that you can give out for people to contact you or AARP?
Sure. Go get your taxes done. Maybe take a look at the IRS website today. And, you know, I just mentioned our helpline. If folks want to, you know, call us and get some help or just talk about scams, it's 877-908-3360.
Hi, everybody. I'm Freddie Bell, and now it's time for news from this week. The Senate on Tuesday passed a bill to make daylight savings time permanent. If it passes through the House, Americans will no longer change their clocks twice a year. The Sunshine Protection Act, introduced by Senator Marco Rubio, but co-sponsored by a bipartisan group of lawmakers, seeks to bring the entire country in line with states like Florida, which have already voted to end standard time, which runs from November through March. And we heard the sad news that gymnast Suni Lee, the gymnast who won gold at the Tokyo Olympics, is opening up about suffering from imposter syndrome in the wake of her victory. She won a gold medal in the women's all-around competition at the Tokyo Olympics in July 2021, making history as the first Hmong American Olympic gymnast. But she told ESPN that she's been having difficulty maintaining confidence in herself. Since then, she has competed at Auburn. And former President Barack Obama may be moving to a new career. He's set to narrate a new Netflix documentary series about national parks, and the streamer revealed a first look on Tuesday. Our Great National Parks will be a 5-part documentary about the world's most breathtaking national parks and the wildlife that live there. And everyone is still talking about the eccentric, power-mad, cult-like leader who has launched a surprise bid to retake what we thought he had abandoned long ago, because Tom Brady has changed his mind on retirement and will return to the Buccaneers to play a 23rd season. This is great news for the NFL, but bad news for the guy who bought Tom Brady's last touchdown football for over $500,000 just hours before Brady announced his comeback. That's news this week. I'm Freddie Bell, and this is New Beginnings. Get the most from AARP, including advice and support to help you care for your loved ones. Fraud prevention with tips and tools to help protect you from scams and fraud, including a free helpline if you've been targeted, a scam tracking map, and watchdog alerts via email through the AARP Fraud Watch Network. If you don't know AARP, you don't know ARP.
More information at AARP.org. In today's world, we really need words of encouragement. Introducing Words to the Wise by Freddie Bell. Let your mind be opened by the wisdom of thought. Let the inspiration of the words feed your mind, body, and spirit. Regardless of the issues you face each day, Words to the Wise by Freddie Bell can help you power through. Words to the Wise by Freddie Bell, a handy reference. Available on Amazon, FreddieBell.com, and Barnes & Noble.
Save your time and skip the trip. If you have an unused at-home COVID-19 saliva test kit, use it now if you feel sick. And save a trip to an in-person testing site. A message from the Minnesota Department of Health.
This is a news-oriented broadcast, and all information is educational in nature, is not intended to be legal, securities, tax, or insurance advice. Please consult with the appropriate professional before acting on information heard during the broadcast.
You're listening to New Beginnings.
New Beginnings with Freddie Bell.
Hi, everyone. I'm Freddie Bell, and now it's time to talk finance with Libel Sternbach. Libel is an Amazon best-selling author of Living with Financial Anxiety and Authenticity. He gives advice, and he's been featured on a lot of different publications, Yahoo Finance, CNN Business, Investment News, Market Watch, and more. We want to talk about advisors, and Libel, welcome to the program. And as I'm thinking about this, I've seen a lot of commercials on television. I hear them on radio, and they're talking about financial advisors, and they go, oh, wait a minute, you don't have to pay me because I've got my fees coming this way, or it's only a small commission. I'm just wondering, Wall Street recently did a series of articles on how advisors get paid. And it made me realize that there are so many different people who call themselves financial advisors. I'm using air quotes. So what is, Libel, a financial advisor?
That is a really great question. In the course of my career, I have worked with so many people who have called themselves financial advisors. I have worked with mortgage brokers. I have worked with real estate investors. I have worked with people who were completely unlicensed in anything at all and just helped people negotiate with the bank. I've worked with people just do coaching. There is such a full spectrum of people who call themselves financial advisors. The truth is that the term financial advisor is not regulated. If someone were to call themselves an attorney, right, they can get arrested. They can get sued for false advertisement if they weren't actually an attorney. Financial advisor is not one of those regulated terms that somebody could sue you or the government could come after you and say, no, you're not a financial advisor. New York State and a few states are starting to pass laws that someone can't call themselves a financial planner unless they have a specific designation or education in financial planning. But that is something that is happening very slowly. So when you're talking to someone who calls themselves a financial advisor, you really got to ask yourself and you got to pull out from them, what makes them a financial advisor? Are they a salesperson in disguise? Or are they a professor? Or what is it that makes them an advisor?
It's kind of disturbing that you say that anybody can do that. So are you really, really saying that Freddie Bell can say that he's a financial advisor and you can say that John Jones down the street, he can call himself a financial advisor without any penalty, Libel?
Correct. And they do it all the time.
That's concerning.
They do it all the time. Yep.
How do you determine who's real, who's not, who really is a financial advisor?
There's an article that I did with LegalZoom walking through about how to differentiate different types of financial advisors. But the short version of it is you want to ask them, what is it that makes them an advisor? What exactly is it that they do? How do they get paid? And what makes them the expert at what they do? And whatever answers they give you, one, you have to be comfortable with it, but you should also get yourself a second opinion. You go to a doctor, right, and they give you a prognosis. And unless it's you got a cold, chances are you go to another doctor and you ask them their opinion. Mm-hmm. You should do that with your financial advisor because the fact that there isn't a standardized education for doing pretty much almost anything in the financial industry, if you want to sell a stock, there's a standard test for that. If you want to sell an insurance product, there's a standard test for that. But that test is just designed to make sure that you have some basic knowledge. It doesn't tell you, you know, is it right for somebody? What use cases should you do it? It's not like a doctor who's, you know, could be in school for up to 12 years or more in order to become a doctor, or a lawyer who has, you know, a minimum of, you know, a bachelor's and 3 years of law school at a minimum in order to become a lawyer. There isn't that much education requirements, if any, to become a financial advisor. So you really want to know, what is it that makes them an expert? And then get a second opinion, because, and a third opinion, until you find one that resonates with you and, you know, you believe to be true, because it may very well not be.
Interesting. I'm wondering, would this be a good litmus test if we look for a difference? If somebody's charging me a fee, is that, or somebody who is a fiduciary? And what do those terms even mean? Is that a way to differentiate between somebody who's really has your best interests at heart or who does not?
So let's talk about it, and then you can decide for yourself, you know, whether it makes you feel good. And I have to say that the industry has its own opinions about this. And I've been doing this, you know, and working with financial advisors for more than 15 years now, almost 20 years now. And I honestly, I've seen good advisors and bad advisors on the whole spectrum. So I don't think the fee structure is necessarily reflective of whether you're getting good advice or not. Mm-hmm. In theory, it should help align it. So let's talk about the different ways that advisors get compensated and what they're called. So when financial services really first came about, it was stockbrokers. You wanted to own a piece of a public company because that was the primary way for companies to raise capital, that they need money, more money than a bank is willing to loan out, and to do big projects like build skyscrapers and cities and power plants and things like, you know, major projects that you just can't go to one bank and ask them for money for, or even go to 10 banks and ask them money for. They don't want to take on that risk. So you go to the public and you say, have a piece of this massive project that we're going to do, and you're going to own a piece of the company. So stockbrokers came about as the middleman between the public and the companies. And they would represent the companies, and they would help advise the public in choosing and evaluating companies. But stockbrokers are salespeople. Right? They get paid on the sale that they make. So you know where their loyalties lie. And while they will educate you, and there is a standard that they have to uphold, at the end of the day, they're getting paid a commission, right? You then have insurance. So insurance, while technically is not an investment, it is something that can provide investment-like values that investors are looking for. And when I say investment-like values, you invest for the outcome, right? We're not investing because, well, few people invest because they want to own the company. People did invest in Tesla because they believed in the mission. But most people do not invest in the S&P 500 because they believe in the top 500 companies in the S&P 500. What they're investing for is return. They're investing for retirement. They're investing for that compounding interest. They're investing because it is the one asset class that has consistently produced, you know, 6 to 7% inflation adjusted returns over the last 100+ years. They're looking for that to help build them a retirement. So insurance companies do provide products that can provide similar benefits for retirees, for investors, as they're looking for in terms of investments. And they can also provide other services, whether it's long-term care insurance, life insurance, other types of benefits, downside protection that you wouldn't get by investing in the stock market. However, again, very few insurance companies allow you to go directly to the insurance company to buy a policy. So in order for you as the public to purchase a policy, you have to go through an agent. Even if you're calling up the insurance company, even if you are, you know, doing it online, you are technically going through an insurance agent. That insurance agent is kind of like a real estate agent. They're a salesperson. Mm-hmm. They may or may not get paid a commission. Traditionally, they're paid a commission on the product they sell. So they, again, have an incentive to sell you a product. And while they do want to recommend the best product, and while you can sue them if they don't provide, you know, they don't make a good recommendation, there's still that, you know, little bit of a disconnect of, well, they're getting paid a commission, and so they may have an incentive to offer you something that's not necessarily in your best interest. You also have the question of, well, are they representing one company or multiple companies? Mm-hmm. Because every company specializes in their type of insurance and their type of risk. And so while one company might be really great for your neighbor, they may not be the right one for you. And so you want to make sure that you have somebody who is what's called a broker who can go to multiple companies. But again, not all companies pay the same amount. So somebody may be incentivized to recommend one company's product over another. So you want to keep those biases in mind. Very important.
So you mentioned insurance agent. I know insurance agents make a commission. Does a fiduciary make a commission, or how are they paid, and why should I care?
So a fiduciary is a technical term. It's a legal term to someone who has a legal responsibility to your money. And technically, it's actually it goes back hundreds of years, the term fiduciary. Mm. And lots of people have limited fiduciary duty. They have a duty to your money in the context of a specific case. You give money to a real estate agent, or you give money to an attorney, or you give money to an insurance agent. They have a fiduciary responsibility to that money to make sure that it's protected, to make sure that it is used for its designated purpose. In investments, there is a term called fiduciary. There are advisors. There are people who are regulated to a standard that's known as the fiduciary standard, which, again, we're talking about a legal definition, right? So the cases, you know, the SEC or the local state securities administrator will regulate and say, who is a fiduciary? What are their responsibilities as a fiduciary? And the kind of colloquial wisdom, and the wisdom that the industry says, is it means putting your interest first above the interest of the firm. And that is, you know, on the surface, what a fiduciary is, how that takes form, and whether someone can sell insurance at the same time as being, you know, a commissionable product and still be a fiduciary. They may be able to do that, right? And so being a fiduciary is a higher status, but it does not automatically make someone make the advice better. It's just a legal definition. So you really want to ask yourself the question, and you want to get from your advisor, you want it in writing from them that says, you know, I am going to put your interest first. These are the ways that I am getting compensated. These are my biases, and I am disclosing them to you. These are the limitations in the advice that I can give you. You know, maybe they can only represent certain products. Maybe they have affiliations with certain vendors. And you want to find out from them what those biases are. And a good advisor will be very upfront with you about them, because they know they exist and they want the two of you to be on the same page.
It really does make a lot of sense. We're just under a minute here before we have to step away. So are you saying, in summary, that a good advisor is one who puts your interest first, no matter what the letters that come behind the name happen to be?
Absolutely. And they will put it in writing. That is something that you want. If someone is not willing to put that in writing, that they're going to put your interest first and how and where their biases are, then you really should think twice about working with them. You really should think twice. There may be good reasons for it, but there's plenty of other advisors who are willing to put that in writing for you. And something we didn't mention, which we should get to in our next segment, is fee-only advisors, which is, you know, a subset of those fiduciary advisors who eliminate that commission bias. So you've got layers within layers in this industry.
Thank you, Libel. We look forward to hearing from you again next week. His website is simply libelonfire.com. That's libelonfire.com. I'm Freddie Bell, and more New Beginnings is straight ahead.
Introducing the New Beginnings Podcast, featuring career, health, and financial information for people on the go. To get your fresh start, visit freddiebell.com/newbeginnings. Check out the New Beginnings Podcast today.
Minnesota is home to a robust network of more than 300 food shelves that may be able to offer additional food support to families and individuals who are suffering from hunger. Hunger Solutions can locate a food shelf near you. Call the Minnesota Food Helpline at 1-888-711-1151, 888-711-1151, or use the interactive map at hungersolutions.org. This message powered by the Minnesota Department of Health.
Minneapolis Public Housing is right now on New Beginnings with Freddie Bell.
And right now joining us is the property manager for the Cora McCorvey Health and Wellness Center in Minneapolis. It's Kitty Harris. Good morning, Kitty.
Good morning, Freddie. Always a pleasure to be with you.
Glad you're with us this weekend, and we finally have some sunshine. And that portends for some more activities at the Cora McCorvey Health and Wellness Center. You've got a big event coming up.
Yes, absolutely. We love spring, and now that things are starting to warm up, we can start back having some of our community engagement activities. And so next Friday, March the 25th, we will be hosting a food clinic, and so people can come in and get boxes of food. And so we're encouraging people to give us a call and register so that we know how many boxes we need to prepare, but it is a free community resource in partnership with the Lau Assistance Center, who's located on our second floor, that we are able to do this food giveaway.
Are you getting information at the Cora McCorvey Health and Wellness Center and the Lau about food insecurities on the north side?
Yes. Where we are physically located here at Cora McCorvey is a food desert within itself. When we've surveyed the community has always told us how hard it is, even just to get over to Broadway, to Cub, or to go downtown to Target. And so we've been trying to work and identify partnerships that can bring in mobile food shelf components for our community that can be culturally specific to the people that come to the Cora McCorvey Health and Wellness Center. And so we're hoping that this is something that we can do on an ongoing basis as funding allows. But we're very excited to be able to help just put a little small dent in this need and provide this food giveaway.
So how many people are you prepared to serve on the 25th?
Well, right now we are just doing a registration. We're hoping to get as many families as possible. We don't have a cap on it right now. And so, we just want people to give us a call at 612-344-2221 to register for the boxes so that we can have them. The giveaway is going to be on Friday, March 25th. And it's going to be from 11 to 3 p.m., but people do need to register, so they can't just walk in and get a box. We do want to make sure that people are registering so that we prepare and we have enough. But I do know that the pallets are very huge, and they hold about 1,000 pounds of food per pallet. And so we do anticipate having some pallets come. But, again, we want to make sure that folks are registering so that we can be prepared for this giveaway.
When people call to register, are there any requirements or restrictions upon the registration?
Nope. It's open to anyone that calls in. They just need to come over, and they need to be able to come over and pick the box up themselves over at 1015 4th Avenue North. But there are no income restrictions or no any of those other things. We just need people to come in and get the service.
Wow. You've had a vaccine clinic. You've got a food distribution. I remember the sing-outs at the Cora McCorvey Health and Wellness Center. You're really a big resource for people who are living right there and even just in the entire Northside community.
Yes, and that's our goal, to continue to be that hub. You know, we are still hosting our monthly sing-outs the second Monday of every month at 1:30, and we're excited to welcome the community back with us. And as we get into the spring months, you know, and we shy away from our COVID vaccines, we will still be doing the booster clinic. We'll be ready in the fall for our flu shots. We'll be continuing our blood drive initiatives. We just want to make sure that we at the Cora McCorvey Health and Wellness Center are doing our part to promote health and wellness in our community and to be that resource for this community.
Give us the date and the registration information, telephone number for folks who'd like to be a part of the event on the 25th.
Yes, they can call 612-344-2221. The event's going to be on Friday, March 25th from 11 to 3 p.m. Registration is required. So again, give us a call at 612-344-2221.
She's Kitty Harris, the property manager for the Cora McCorvey Health and Wellness Center, and this is New Beginnings. Hi, everybody. I'm Freddie Bell, and Joe McKenzie is with us. He is the founder of Ripple Connects. He turns candidates into contenders, and he does that through his company entitled Ripple Connects. And you can reach him at 763-438-1621. Joe McKenzie, glad to have you with us this morning. How are things in the Joe McKenzie world?
Busy as always, but that's the way I always liked it. And just being here to talk with you this morning and sharing some insights for our New Beginnings listeners is an important part of my life. So I appreciate the opportunity to speak to them and collaborate with you each and every week.
Well, it's great to have you with us too, Joe. So let's talk now about that important role that relationships play in building your own career ladder. So where would you like to start? I'm thinking we talk about the value, first of all, of just relationships.
Absolutely. I think that's a great place to start. Our working relationship this past eight years is critical to me. You've helped me grow. You have been an important couple rungs on my ladder because I've been able to move upward because of my collaboration with you, what I've learned from you, how I've refined how I communicate. And when I look at a number of relationships that are key for me in my career, I think we bring it forward to say building those relationships up, adding new, fostering new relationships is as critical as any other aspect of a job search and a career. Do you agree with that, Freddie?
Right. And what I've learned over time working directly with you, Joe McKenzie, is that this is an intentional proposition. You have to be intentional about building the relationships, which these relationships that you mentioned, and I'm going to use your term, these relationships can form your new bench of advocates.
Absolutely. That's being intentional about building relationships. I've known many people that have talked to me about that and how they've been able to go where they wanted to go. But they took the time, they invested into those relationships. It's time tested. It takes time. And, think about what we've done in the past 8 years and how many people we've helped, but also we've helped each other along the way because we've invested. We're very intentional about our working relationship, right?
That's true. That's true. And there's so much value in taking the time to check in, to see what's going on, to bounce ideas. And as you mentioned, your bench of advocates know best about what's going on with you, but you can't have that unless you've intentionally built that relationship in the first place.
That's correct. And we all have, we've had a program on cognitive diversity, how people go about solving problems differently. Well, Freddie, you've been critical in helping me solve some of my problems or issues that I had because you approach it differently. So that's one of the main things that are built into a relationship. We all think differently or approach our problems differently. And firsthand, I've solved problems because of your help. But I think we draw that forward for people hearing us today, that a relationship is two people that have a working relationship, professional relationship, but they also give each other insights on how to go about things or share experiences, successes and failures. That's a relationship, right? That's the value of a relationship. And that's why being intentional about it can help you navigate your own career. And hopefully that's an upward trajectory, like in a sense, a career ladder.
You know, it's interesting. I've talked with different people about being on a bench, part of my bench of advocates and so forth, but I didn't use that term. But I've noticed that some of these advocates can happen instantly, but I think some of the more meaningful ones takes a little bit of time to develop a really diverse, a really good, strong bench. Is that what you find, Joe McKenzie?
Yes, I started with a very small bench probably 15 years ago when I left the office equipment industry. But then I started seeing where I needed to add, kind of shore up different areas or add to that bench. And so once you learn the concept and you invest in those relationships, you start to see where there's potential for growth there with your bench. And you're out there looking for it. It may not be filled immediately, but you're out there looking for it because now you've seen the dividends of collaborating and building out that relationship. Now you're more open to it. And that's a good thing because some of the people that are on my bench of advocates, I've only known less than 10 years and you included. And so, you know, think about that. If I look at it, the last 10 years for my bench of advocates has done wonders for my career. And I'm very proud of what I've been able to build. And I'm very proud of how I've been able to help the people on my bench of advocates. It's a balanced relationship, right?
It really is. We got to leave it right there. Joe McKenzie, great discussion this weekend. You do some fine work at Ripple Connects as well.
Yes, we do. We turn candidates into contenders.
Here are today's words to the wise. It is what it is. Today's words to the wise. It is what it is. You can find more at FreddieBell.com, Amazon.com, and at Barnes & Noble. Thanks for listening. Thanks for calling. Thanks for making us a part of your weekend on New Beginnings. This is Freddie Bell reminding you that every day is a chance for a new beginning. Goodbye, everybody.